Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
All right, we're halfway through the preseason, so we're halfway to the real thing. I might be about half as optimistic after that second preseason game as I was after that first one, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, this one was, outside of a couple individual players, I thought that in general the team took kind of a little bit of a step back. For this preseason game, especially the ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think what concerned me most was the line play on both sides of the ball. I thought the first team offensive line was particularly terrible just about every possession in that first quarter, for sure. And, you know, the first two or three possessions, the defensive line was really bad and just getting blown off the ball. But, you know, they did improve. I think on that third or fourth drive, they finally started to get things together. But there's definitely a concern going forwards, because if both of them play like that at the same time consistently like that, then the Bills are going to be picking in the top five in the 2019 draft.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And one thing that it made it difficult for me to really evaluate AJ McCarron, I mean, yes, he didn't play that great. Yes, he got hurt, but because of how poor the line was playing, it was very difficult to really see him be able to make the decisions and see what he can actually do, because he was basically running for his life most of the time that he was out there.
Yeah, and I think back a couple pods ago is when I said, you know, this might be where we see how much value Tyrod Taylor gave this offense, because he can extend some of those plays, and AJ McCarron's not really a swift-footed guy, and we saw, you know, he really, really struggled to have any sort of time to throw the ball. And when you're not a mobile quarterback at all, you have to have at least some sort of time. And he didn't even have a chance to really reset the pocket. Myles Garrett was just breathing down his neck the entire game.
In that same point, though, you can see the difference. The touchdown pass that Josh Allen had, you really saw the difference between what Josh Allen's capable of and kind of what AJ McCarron and Nate Peterman are capable of in terms of resetting the pocket, avoiding free rushers, and still keeping their eyes on the field. Because even on that play, the offensive line forgot to block one of the linebackers, and then Marcus Murphy also just completely whiffed his block. So that guy had a free runner in, and Josh Allen still was able to step away. I'm pretty certain that if that was McCarron or Peterman, that's probably a sack.
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the things, you know, I don't think Josh Allen gets enough credit for, is how athletic he is. You know, he does get a little bit of happy feet, and his footwork can concern me sometimes when he's, you know, doesn't have a perfectly clean pocket, but, you know, he can make up for it with his arm, and as long as the accuracy doesn't suffer, you know, that's okay. That throw on the touchdown pass to Streeter, that was a beautiful play. What did concern me a bit mechanically on that is the hips weren't quite facing towards the target, and I'm not sure that pass will always be delivered where the receiver can get it. You know, it was almost on his back hip. That's a spot where if he misses just a few more inches, that could be intercepted by the defensive back.
Yeah, I think that's one of those things we're going to have to kind of live with. We've both kind of compared Josh Allen to Matt Stafford in the sense of the different arm angles that he throws from and the different release points that he has, and I think that's something that's going to continue throughout his career. I because of his athleticism combined with his penchant for trying to make that big play, I think what Bills fans are going to have to live with is him trying those weird arm slots and weird release points and seeing those big plays even 60, 70% of the time he does that. But then also they're going to have to live with some of those interceptions or just really brutal throws that he makes, at least to start. Hopefully he develops a better idea of when it's the appropriate time to do that. Stafford has definitely gotten better at that over his career, but he's still, if Josh Allen turns into Matt Stafford and continues to make those plays, am I going to complain? Probably not. I think Matt Stafford is a pretty good if Josh Allen's career turns into Matt Stafford's career, I will be pretty happy.
Yeah, I mean, I would consider that a hit on a draft pick if you end up with Matt Stafford. I mean, he hasn't been a phenomenal quarterback, but he's been more than serviceable. I'd say he's probably in that large second tier of quarterbacks that you could probably lump 15 guys into and he's probably near the top end of that tier. But yeah, I mean, if Josh Allen is Matt Stafford, you have to be happy as a Bills fan, as long as they can build something around him. I'm curious, Nate, with a bit of those, you know, footwork and mechanical issues, that's obviously something you're not going to be able to fix now that we're in the middle of the season, in terms of like having a whole off season. So you think maybe between year one and year two, that's something that they can maybe work on to strip down those mechanics a bit and fix some of those things. Yeah, I think that would help his accuracy. It hasn't really been terrible in the preseason, but it's one of those things that kind of concerns me from a small sample size.
Yeah, I mean, his completion percentage in the preseason is actually exactly the same as it was in college so far, about 56-57%. Now, some of that is the first game he was 9 for 20 and a couple balls that he probably wants back. Second game, he was actually completed about 70% of his passes. One thing I will say for certain is that between his senior year at Wyoming and now, his footwork has gotten remarkably better. And just seeing him able to do that in the short time it's been gives me some hope that from between year one and year two and even throughout the rest of the season, it's going to continue to improve. Now, I don't know for certain whether or not that was Jordan Palmer working with him in the lead-up to the draft or the Bills coaches after the draft. Hopefully it was the Bills coaches at least had something to do with that, because that would give me even more hope that he will continue to improve in that area.
Yeah, so back to 2019 or 2018. Let's not get ahead of ourselves in 19. But McCarron went down with a hairline fracture so of his collarbone. That's it for him. He's not going to be the starter. So is now the time that you hand the reins over to Josh Allen in this third preseason game and say, show us what you got?
I have a hard time with this one. I do think he should see at least a decent amount of time with the ones in this third game against the Bengals on Sunday. However, I don't necessarily think that it's the right idea to start him week one, regardless of how he plays on Sunday.
Yeah, so I listened to Joe Biscaglia and Matt Fairburn on the Bills beat earlier this week, and I thought Fairburn made a good point when he said, you know, maybe it's not a good idea to hold a young quarterback back out of fear that, you know, they're not mentally prepared to, you know, lead an NFL team. But the point he made was, if they're not ready now, they're probably not ever going to be, so you might as well just kind of throw them into the fire. I'm curious to see what you think of that, Nate.
I do understand the reasoning there. My hesitation is the Bills' schedule this season. It is so heavily front-loaded with very, very, very good defenses that I almost wonder if it would be beneficial for Josh Allen in terms of his just confidence overall, his overall confidence to not throw him to the wolves, and especially in those first four games of the season, where they go Ravens, Chargers, Vikings, Packers. And the Vikings and Packers games are, and Ravens. So three of those four are on the road. Now, I don't know if I'd want necessarily to throw him to the wolves like that as a rookie, because if something happens, say, similar to what Peterman experienced last year in his first start, what does that do to his confidence?
Right. Once you hand over the reins to Josh Allen, you can't take him back. I mean, you've made a statement. You traded up to get this guy at number 7 overall. Once you put him out there, I think that's it. Once you, if you remove him from the situation to say, oh, he wasn't ready yet, I don't know what, I think that's worse for his psyche than, you know, letting him take a beating out there.
Yeah, I would 100% agree with that. And that's why if I were the Bills coaching staff and front office, I would be hesitant to start him week one, regardless of how you feel about him compared to Peterman. If you think Peterman is also ready to start, I think it makes sense to at least start the season with Peterman at this point.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is going to depend on the result of these first couple of games of the regular season if they do not start Josh Allen. I mean, at Baltimore is going to be a tough game. It's probably going to be low scoring, so it's not like you need some sort of explosive offense anyways. We know the Ravens are a good defense. The Bills hopefully will be a good defense. And you know, it's going to be low scoring. So Peterman can probably handle that game. If you win that game, I think you roll with Peterman again. But I mean, if you end up starting 0-2, 0-3, 0-4, which is a real possibility with that, like you said, that front loaded schedule, that does maybe make it a little bit easier and take off some pressure if the team's, you know, 1-3, 0-4 after four games.
Yeah, it certainly would. And then when you do, if you say you do decide to start Josh Allen for the first time in week five, he goes, it would be Titans, Texans, Colts, which I think is a, with the exception of the Texans, a friendlier set of three games than starting him at the beginning of the season. The one thing, and like you said before, you have to figure out when you want to start play him, because once you do play him, you can't take that away from him. And I don't think you can take it away from him for the entire rest of the season. So once he goes in there, he's your guy. And you got to live with that decision.
Yeah, I mean, you can't give him the EJ Manuel treatment where you start him and then say a year later, maybe he's not ready. We'll play Kyle Orton now. You know, this is a high draft pick. You know, you've invested your, if you're Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, you've invested your career in this guy. So once you give him the green light, you know, all eyes are on him, and as well as Bean and McDermott, because that's their career.
Exactly. Like the entire Buffalo Bills organization, with the exception of the ownership, is kind of banking on Josh Allen being a success. And that's why it's such a difficult decision. It's such a difficult decision to, you know, say, okay, when are we going to play this kid? As of right now, and watching him in the preseason so far, he looks really good. And I would not be upset or opposed to him starting week one. I just think you have to kind of weigh the pros and cons of doing so.
Yeah, and I mean, Nathan Peterman is Sean McDermott's guy. So I do think he's probably leaning towards Peterman, but they're getting ahead of ourselves previewing the third preseason game, which is typically the dress rehearsal for the starters. You have to think that both Peterman and Allen are going to get extended time with the first team offense. And if Josh Allen has himself a day, I mean, is Sean McDermott, how do you say, no, we're not going to put this guy out there?
Yeah, I think that's another thing that they're going to have to deal with is pressure from the fan base, which I don't necessarily think McDermott cares about that. But at the same time, as an organization, if Josh Allen looks really good yet again on Sunday, there's going to be a lot of people out there that, you know, want you to go with your guy, your top 10 pick that you just traded up to get this year in the draft.
Right, and if you start Peterman, he's looked competent in the preseason. He also did last year, and we saw how that turned out. So, I mean, I think Allen looks like a much better quarterback than Peterman. I think that goes without saying. But, I mean, if we know who the better quarterback is, I think there's a good argument to play him, unless you're truly concerned about him taking a beating behind that offensive line. So we'll kind of loop back to the recap of that game against the Browns on Friday night. And Deion Dawkins is supposed to be the best offensive lineman on, you know, out of those five. And he got absolutely destroyed almost every play by Myles Garrett.
Yeah. The offensive line in general, but especially the left side of the offensive line, really struggled. The right side of the offensive line, I think, did an okay job. Dawkins just whiffed too many times. And yes, it's Myles Garrett. Yes, he is one of the better pass rushers in the league. But the Bills are going to face a lot of those this year, and you have to expect your left tackle to be able to at least keep them under control.
Yeah, I mean, Joey Bosa's there week two. Minnesota and Green Bay both have good rushers. It's, you know, Deion Dawkins needs to be an above-average left tackle. He was probably about average last year, and that's fine for a rookie. He'll learn, but he has to elevate his play when he goes up against a guy like Garrett. I mean, not everyone's going to be Myles Garrett, but you have to at least give your quarterback a chance. And he was just getting toyed with by Myles Garrett, and it cost AJ McCarron his chance at the starting job.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed watching that game for the second time is there were multiple times where the Bills would block with six or five, and the Browns would only rush four, and they would still struggle. And you saw in the first preseason game, the tight ends and running backs doing a pretty good job of chipping a lot of those guys off the ball, and they didn't do as much of that against the Browns, and you saw a major difference. So that's another thing I'm curious to see if Dable goes back to that on Sunday, where he uses his tight ends and running backs to help the, especially the tackles on both sides, get their pass rushers under control with those little chip blocks coming out of the snap.
Yeah, we don't get any All-22 film yet, at least that I know of, for the preseason, but I did get to watch the replay on NFL Network on Sunday morning, and I noticed they don't really ask Russell Bodine to do a whole lot. He's usually trying to help Vlad Dukas, it looks like. I thought John Miller, like you said, on that right side, held his own. There's a couple plays where Dukas was just kind of looking for someone to block as the quarterback or the running back was getting smeared by the guy. It looked like he was supposed to be blocking. We don't know the assignments, but it does concern me if Groy is not the starter, because I think he can help Dukas out and at least eliminate that pressure coming straight up the middle.
Yeah, like you said, they didn't ask Russell Bodine to do a ton, but when they did ask him to do something, he got walked back. I think it was the fourth play of the game where the Bills kept in six guys to block, and Bodine just got shoved in to McCarron within half a second almost after the snap when he was tasked with blocking someone one-on-one. And if that is a trend that continues, I would hope that he does not play center for the Bills for too long this season.
Yeah, that was one of the things. Buffalo Rumblings did a great film breakdown of Bodine when the Bills signed him. He does run block really well, especially as a guy that can pull and, you know, get out there in front of the running back on those, you know, outside zone plays. But he really struggles in pass protection, especially if left on his own, you know, not double teaming a guy. And I think Roy's been the better player through the whole preseason. So I'm interested to see, you know, going forward in this dress rehearsal game against the Bengals, who gets the first team reps there.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious as well. I like to see Groy get some time with the first team just to see what he looks like compared to Bodine. But I think if we see Bodine again with the first team, you have to kind of assume that Bodine's going to be their guy going into week one.
Yeah, and I'm also wondering how long Vlad Dukas lasts as the left guard. Now, he was serviceable at right guard last year. He played okay in that zone scheme. He hasn't blocked well in pass protection, and I don't think he gives anything to really be that much desired in the run blocking game either. So I wonder how long until Wyatt Teller is taking over that job.
Yeah, and I've heard pretty much nothing but good things about Teller all preseason, all through training camp, and when he has been on the field. Yes, it hasn't been against first team guys or even second team guys a lot of the time. He has looked very good when he's been in there. He is clearly a very, very physical guard, and I think that's something that the Bills had with Richie Incognito the past few years, and getting someone, another big physical body like Teller in there, I think that if they think he's ready, and at this point, you know, it's hard to tell because he hasn't played against gotten any of those first team reps, but his physicality really jumps off the film to me.
Yeah, so another thing I want to touch on recapping that game, Rod Streeter played pretty well. Ray McLeod was a bit quieter. I don't know if he saw a whole lot of snaps. I know he's dealing with an injury leading up to that game, but I think we're probably looking at a roster spot battle there, Nate, between Streeter and McLeod. I can't imagine both of them making the roster unless Corey Coleman gets cut. I don't see that happening either. So that's one thing I do want to pay attention to in that Bengals game is, you know, who's getting those first or second team reps with the offense there. Is it McLeod, Streeter, or both, and how do they play?
Yeah, I mean, the third preseason game is generally seen as a kind of dress rehearsal for week one. And we can't We don't know for sure how McDermott and company are going to treat this game. Are they going to treat it as a full-on, you know, dress rehearsal and play the starters, including the quarterback with the ones for the whole first half, or how is that going to go? But that will be that'll definitely be something to watch on Sunday.
Yeah, and, you know, we've kind of gone back and forth on whether Streeter provides any value on special teams. I did see Joe Biscaglia the last day of training camp. I think Streeter was on the coverage unit. So that is interesting because Marcus Murphy's shown himself as a valuable return man. So that kind of takes away from McLeod's special teams ability, right? If he's not the guy out there returning kicks, if Streeter can play on that coverage unit and McLeod's not, that could be tipping the hand of who they like to keep on the roster.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I think if McLeod's not going to be returning at least some of the kicks or the majority of the kicks, is it worth a roster spot for him versus Streeter, who Streeter has looked better as a wide receiver throughout the preseason?
Yeah, McLeod definitely has boatloads of potential, it looks like. I mean, not to be a superstar, but at least a productive player in the NFL as a, you know, wide receiver 3 or 4 as he develops. But, you know, I think Streeter brings a lot more experience. You know, he's a good route runner, decent speed for a guy that's 30 years old. So that will be interesting. Anything else you want to add on the offensive side, Nate?
So one thing I do want to talk about is that first Josh Allen drive in that game. The Bills' offense had been a complete disaster until Josh Allen stepped on the field, and he immediately comes in and leads them on a long touchdown drive. And one thing, there's a bunch of things that I really liked about that drive. First thing is Josh Allen's mobility and elusiveness in the pocket. He does things in the pocket that neither of the other two Bills quarterbacks are capable of doing. He makes pass rushers miss, keeps his eyes downfield. When he gets in the open field, he can run. And he kept that drive alive multiple times, including when he drew that penalty. And it's just the difference. You can immediately see the difference when Josh Allen stops on the field versus McCarron and Peterman.
Yeah, and I've heard a lot of quotes from guys around the locker room saying, you know, if he's ready, he's our leader, he's our guy. And I think it might have been Lorenzo Alexander, maybe, or Shaq Lawson. Shaq Lawson said that he hasn't seen a leader at quarterback like this since Deshaun Watson when they played together at Clemson. So that's singing some pretty high praise from a guy that's, you know, not even on the same side of the ball as Allen.
Yeah, it's pretty clear that the locker room really likes Josh Allen and that he is not acting like a rookie, and he's really been taking a leadership role on this team. And that is something that I definitely look for in a rookie quarterback, and I expect out of a rookie quarterback. So the fact that he's doing that and the team sees that is a huge thing, regardless of his play on the field. But the thing he's been able to do, at least in the preseason so far, is he's backed it up with his play on the field.
Yeah, and that's another thing that kind of muddles the whole Peterman-Allen starting quarterback thing is, if, you know, the leader of your locker room is your backup quarterback, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. So, I mean, like some of those guys on the team have said, if he's ready, you know, we're rolling with him. We trust him. He's our leader.
Yeah, and one thing about that, his first drive that I think a lot of people didn't necessarily pick up on is that was the same offensive line that McCarron was behind for his time in the game. And it was very similarly poor blocking. And Allen made it look like they were doing a much better job because of his ability to keep plays alive, move the pocket, and keep his eyes on the field. That to me, that alone to me says this kid is, you know, ready. Now, yes, it's the preseason, and we don't want to take too much stock out of things that happen in the preseason, especially because defenses aren't really going to show some of the more complex looks that you might see in the regular season. But he's clearly outperformed McCarron. Peterman's played well this preseason, and I don't necessarily want to say Allen's outperformed him, because I think in terms of at least statistically and leading and scoring points, it's been fairly similar, but Allen just flashes way more than the other two.
So one thing I didn't really notice that I should have during that game, was that still Cleveland's first team defense once Allen was in the game?
That I actually don't know. I would have to go back and watch watch his throws again, because I know it was the Bills' first team offensive line, because I noticed that, but I'm not quite sure.
Because I believe that it was the Browns' second team offense that was on the field at that time. At least it was Baker Mayfield. I don't know if that means that was the second team offense. I don't know the Browns' personnel well enough, but you know, I would think if it was the second team offense out there for the Browns, it would also be the second team defense, regardless.
Yes, it was the second team defense. I can confirm that now.
Right, but even so, the offensive line was still, like you said, pretty putrid for Allen, even though it was Cleveland's, you know, second teamers. So you have to be encouraged that he's much better in that aspect of the game than the other two quarterbacks. So one more thing I want to touch on with the offense before we go to the defensive side of the ball with the recap and preview of the next game. Marcus Murphy is a stud, Nate.
Yeah, he has blown me away this preseason. He's made one big mistake that I've noticed the entire preseason, and outside of that, he just flashes. He changes the game when he's on the field, and he has broken off so many big runs and is so elusive in the open field. I can see him working his way into getting quite a few carries, especially towards the midpoint of the season, especially if Ivory doesn't provide that spark as a second running back that you'd expect out of your spell running back guy.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Ivory's on the wrong side of 30. He's done nothing to really impress me at this preseason. I mean, he dropped that pass that ended up being an interception for Peterman in the first preseason game. I think Murphy provides more in the passing game as a return man, even as a second running back. I mean, I'm making the case for Marcus Murphy to be the second guy. I know he's a similar style runner to Shady, but I can't think of an argument right now outside of short yardage situations with Ivory to, you know, really keep Murphy on the bench as the third running back.
Yeah, the play that really jumped out to me that Marcus Murphy made against the Browns was on the first drive, that second and three they had from about, I think it was a 22 or 23 yard line, if I remember correctly, where they in the shotgun, they ran that little inside zone, and he, right when he got the ball, he stopped. And when he stopped for a quick second, he realized that the direction the play was going was wrong, and he quick identified where he needed to be, cut to the right, and almost scored a touchdown on that play.
Yeah, and he also had like a 40-yard punt return in that game too.
And yeah, and those kind of plays, those kind of big plays, are what the Bills need from their second running back. And the last running back really that gave them that was Carlos Williams.
Right. You know, Mike Gillisley was kind of a run-through-your-face kind of guy, change of pace. Williams was a little bit of that and those, you know, big 25, 30-yard runs as well. So, I don't know. I think there's a better reason to put Murphy out there. He has so much more pop when the ball's in his hands than Chris Ivory.
Yeah, and Ivory on that, even on that same drive, the second and goal play, they handed the ball off to him. He somehow managed to, when he received the ball, and he, instead of clearing the defense, there was a defender laying on the ground, and he managed to trip over him. And I'm just watching that, I have to imagine Marcus Murphy is able to bounce that outside and get to the pylon. And Ivory just is not able to do those kinds of things.
Yeah, and I mean, we can't expect him to. I believe he's 30 years old. If he's not 30, he's either 29 or 31. But regardless, he's spent a long time in the NFL. Doesn't quite have the athleticism that Shady does. And frankly, LeSean McCoy's on the wrong side of 30 too. So, I mean, Marcus Murphy could be, I mean, he's 26, 27, but a lot less mileage there. So he could be a valuable weapon for the Bills going forward, not just this year, but, you know, the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, even though I think he's 26, but he hasn't had the NFL carries, and he didn't even have the college carries that these guys had. So his body is not the body of a 26-year-old running back.
And he's someone that the Bills clearly need to
find a replacement for LeSean McCoy, because he has one, two good years left. And at this point, I'd like to see Marcus Murphy get the chance to be that guy.
Yeah, so if you're fantasy football guys like me and Nate, throw a dart at Marcus Murphy those last few rounds, especially if you draft LeSean McCoy, because I think Murphy's going to be getting a lot of looks, like you said, especially in the middle of the season.
Yeah, he absolutely is. And I'm excited to see how the Bills utilize him on Sunday against the Bengals. I would hope he gets a little bit of run with the first team offense on Sunday and at least gets some plays with them, especially if the Bills keep their first team out there for an extended. I would imagine the Bills' first team is at least going to play the first half. Whether or not both quarterbacks play in the first half, who knows? But I would hope Marcus Murphy gets some run with them on Sunday.
Yeah, so let's flip sides of the ball now and go over to the defense. Obviously, the big news there is the Kyle Williams knee injury. We don't know the extent of it. We got the Sean McDermott coach speak. Not that that's unusual. It's week to week. So Harrison Phillips, this is his time to shine as the starting three tech.
Yeah, and we're gonna see what Harrison Phillips brings. And in all honesty, you can't really, the play of the first team defensive line can't really go down from where it was against the Browns. So I'm definitely most on Sunday. I think I'm actually more interested in watching the defense than I am in watching the offense. And the reason for that is, a lot of people, including both of us, have expected the Bills, if they're going to win games this year, it's going to be on the back of the defense. And the Bills' entire first-team defense against the Browns look kind of lost.
Yeah, and it's going to be tough because there's no depth behind Lotulelei and Harrison Phillips at D-tackle. I mean, you have Adolphus Washington, who's disappointed ever since they drafted him in the third round. And Ricky Hatley, I mean, do you feel comfortable with those guys rotating in for 30-40% of the snaps?
Yeah, probably not. I think that the Bills are going to have to go out and find depth somewhere, especially if Kyle Williams is going to miss any extended time, because what's on the roster right now behind Phillips and Lotulelei is not good enough.
Yeah, and because Phillips is versatile and can play both one tech and three tech, I think you have to make the argument that go out there and get just a pure run-stuffing guy to give Lotulelei a break at one tech. Because, you know, Phillips is a young guy. He's got a really high motor, speaking of coach speak. And like we said, he had 100 tackles in a season at defensive tackle at Stanford. So I think that just shows the guy can play a ton of snaps if you need him to. But you really got to, you know, give him a break once in a while, and Lotulelei.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's something on Sunday that we're gonna have to see what the rotation looks like, because we know that the Bills coaching staff and the defensive side of the ball has, and last year really rotated the defensive line a lot. None of them really played more than 60-65% of the snaps in any given week. So there has to be depth behind them if they're gonna continue to do that this season.
Yeah, so the defensive ends didn't really provide a whole lot of inspiration either. Shaq Lawson's a good run defender. He hasn't shown much pass rush ability at all since they took him in the first round. And Jerry Hughes just still hasn't played out to that contract they gave him. He doesn't impress me as a team's first pass rusher, Nate, especially through the first two games of the preseason as well.
Yeah, I mean, last year Jerry Hughes, he did a really good job of getting in the backfield, creating pressure, but he just hasn't been able to come up with those big-time sacks that you expect out of a guy you are paying that much money to be your number one pass rusher.
Yeah, and I will be watching Tremaine Edmonds a lot, too, in the next preseason game. When he's decisive and, you know, trusts what he sees and goes after the ball carrier, he's dominant. He gets the tackle right away. Where I see him start to struggle is when he's just a bit hesitant with that first or second step, and he ends up getting swallowed up, you know, by a blocker or behind the defensive line getting shoved into him. So I think that's something that's going to come with experience for him. Luke Kuechly wasn't an all-pro linebacker his first year, I don't think. But as soon as, you know, Edmonds develops that mental part of the game, which I think we'll probably see maybe towards the end of this season, he's going to be really, really good.
Yeah, one thing, Daryl Talley actually on Twitter after that game said that he thought Edmonds was reading the runner and the ball carrier instead of the offensive line. And he said that that's a big mistake that a lot of young guys make, where the runner can lie to you, but the offensive line does not lie to you. And it makes a lot of sense to me. And especially coming from someone like Daryl Talley, I'm sure that Tremaine Edmonds is going to hear that from either him directly or the coaching staff looking back at film this week. And I think that, like you said, something that he is just going to need to develop, and that's going to come with time, and it's going to come with game reps. And he's clearly locked in as the Mike linebacker this season, so he's going to get those game reps.
Right. And, I mean, the kid's 20 years old. He just turned 20. So there's a lot of time to learn there, and the athleticism doesn't lie there. I mean, the guy's a freak athlete. As soon as he, you know, develops even a little bit of being able to read the offensive line a bit better and, you know, quarterbacking that defense, he's going to be a special player, I think.
Yeah, he certainly is. And just for reference, Kuechly as a rookie was the defensive rookie of the year. And then in his second season, he was the NFL defensive player of the year. And he is one of two players in NFL history to win rookie of the year and defensive player of the year in his first two seasons in the league. And the other one of those guys, do you have any guesses?
Oh, rookie of the year and then defensive player of the year?
Correct. There's one
Von Miller?
No, it was Lawrence Taylor.
Lawrence Taylor.
The only other player to do that. There are plenty of other guys that have won both awards, but those two are the only ones to do it in their first two seasons.
Right. And I think there's a good chance that, you know, Edmonds could be the defensive rookie of the year. He's going to rack up a lot of tackles. I mean, he's going to play probably every single down on defense.
Yeah, he'll be on the field the vast majority of every single game. And if he, with his athleticism, he is going to make some flash plays. They're going to happen. He's so crazy athletic that there's going to be times probably every week where he does something that you're just like, wow. And there's also going to be times where he goes the complete wrong way and looks like he has no idea what's going on. And that's something we're going to have to live with at least for part of this season. Hopefully not the entire season. Ideally, you'll see him progress each and every single week of this 2018 season.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say, so Josh Allen and Trey Edmonds go, so the Bills go. That's probably how it's going to be for the next few years.
Yeah, I would completely agree with that. If the Bills are going to even compete to return to the playoffs this year, it's going to be because Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds are playing well. I just don't see a world where a Nathan Peterman leads the Bills to the playoffs this season. I just can't see that happening.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about regression to the mean a lot, and, you know, there's probably three or four games that were really close. A single play decided it. And, you know, the Bills were probably more like a 6 or 7 win team that won 9 games, and that's fine. We'll take the playoff appearance, but we can't expect that again. And, you know, the secondary didn't give me a whole lot of inspiration, at least in stopping the run either, because the defensive line got blown off the ball. If Edmonds and Milano got swallowed up, I mean, Jordan Poyer got just manhandled by Carlos Hyde that one play, and you can't have that from your starting safety.
No, and that's something that we're not used to seeing from Poyer. Poyer loves getting down in the box and making those plays, and he did such a good job of that for the majority of last season. And that's a tackle you expect him to make.
Right, and it is the preseason, so there might be some hesitancy for a guy in the secondary to really come up and, you know, make a big hit on a running back because it's a preseason game that doesn't matter. So I wonder if we'll see that change a little bit maybe next week, if they'll bring a bit more intensity, but yeah, that's the thing. The Bengals are probably a much worse offensive team than the Browns. So I want to see all three levels of that defense play much better on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And back to your point, the Bills, by point differential last year, were expected to win about 6 games, like you said. And they just in terms of points per play, they had one of the lowest point or not points yards per offensive play. And out of the last five seasons, the Bills 4.8 yards per play was in the top 10 lowest of any team in the last five seasons, and they still made the playoffs doing that.
Yeah, so we've got to see a lot of improvement on the offensive side of the ball, and the defense is what's going to keep them afloat. And if they play like that, you know, that's not a 6 or 7 win team. That's probably more like a 3 or 4 win team. I expect them to be better than that. It's just one preseason game. We can't be prisoners of the moment, but you know, we have to see some signs of improvement in this next preseason game on that side of the ball.
Yeah, ideally we'd like to see that. At the same time, I do want to stress the lack of importance of the preseason in terms of overall how team performance necessarily is. I think it is important to look at each individual player and how the units are playing, but like we said earlier in the pod, neither offense or defense for any team in the preseason is showing you what they're going to show you week one. So it can be hard unit wide taking too much stock in how they perform.
Right. And also teams aren't going full in like game plan mode for the team they're playing in the preseason. It's more just kind of vanilla packages. You don't want to show too much. Once you get past that last preseason game, the Bills are going to be in full-on preparation mode for the Baltimore Ravens. So hopefully we'll see a bit more intensity out of both sides of the ball once, you know, it's the real thing.
Yeah, and that is clearly to be expected. And I think this week we can take a good amount of stock in, you know, individual performances, seeing how, especially if Josh Allen gets the time with the first unit that we expect him to, how he handles that. But at the same time, we want to be careful making any kind of assumptions or coming to too many conclusions about what the team's going to look like week one, because it's going to be a vastly different, you know, game plan and everything that goes along with that when the real football starts.
All right, Nate. So we're just about to wrap up this pod, and I just got an alert from ESPN that AJ McCarron did not suffer a fracture in his collarbone.
So I guess I have two questions then about that you may or may not know the answer to. Number one, how the heck did that report come out that he did have a fracture in his collarbone? Like, did someone misread the x-rays, or what the heck happened there? And then my second question would be, does that mean he is available on Sunday? I can't imagine he'll be available on Sunday regardless.
Yeah, so I do know that with collarbone injuries, they said it was a hairline fracture. I know it was from listening to the Fantasy Focus Football podcast, Stefania Bell's the injury expert there, and she said those are really difficult to get conclusive results for unless it's an absolute clean break of that bone. So I don't know. That's going to be interesting. I can't imagine he'll play if he's that sore, but it kind of complicates things.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't practice today. McDermott said before in this presser before practice he was not going to practice today. I guess what it'll be curious to see if he practices at all tomorrow. But like you said, I can't imagine he dresses on Sunday, because the last thing you wanted for the Buffalo Bills is to put him out there and have him get hurt in a meaningless game.
Well, Nate, I'm glad I went to check Twitter as well, because we have more breaking news from the Buffalo Bills official Twitter account that Josh Allen has been named the starter for Sunday's game.
So that is that gives us even more to look forward to. I can't say I didn't expect that, but what I am curious to see is how long he plays with the first team and if Peterman also gets to play with the first team on Sunday.
All right, so guess you probably listened to the first 15 to 20 minutes of that pod of us wondering what they were going to do with the first team reps. I'm guessing we'll see Peterman get some after Josh Allen is done with that first team unit. But yeah, this is the beauty of finding out things live while we're recording.
Yeah, so they answered the news cycle answered so many of our questions just as we're wrapping up. So you know, a lot of the stuff we talked about, we got our answers to, which is you don't always get that while you're live recording the podcast.
Yeah, it came full circle for all the listeners here, so you're welcome. So that brings us to an end of, I believe it's episode 20 of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Ballinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts so it can help our rankings and others can, you know, find it and give it a listen. Feel free to share it with a friend to, hopefully grow this community even more. The downloads are going up as we get closer to the season, so we appreciate you guys listening. You can check us out on Twitter at Bills_Breakdown, Facebook at Bills Breakdown, BillsBreakdownPodcast.wordpress.com, and you can send us feedback really at any of those places, but we also have an email, BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.